When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Rio Ferdinand is a massive div. Welcome to the Anglo-Italian pod. As always, my name is Rory, and I'm joined by my very good friends,
Adam and
Ben.
Ben, yeah, you've joined us for the Thursday night club. How are we doing, man?
I feel honored. This feels like an exclusive club, and I've broken through and I'm here now. I've got my membership.
Welcome in. Yeah, it's great to have you here. Adam, how are we doing, man?
I'm doing quite well. I thought you were going to say something like D-I-C-K then, but yeah.
I thought I'd keep it a bit more PG.
Do you know what? I was actually shocked by the announcement by Barcelona this evening, which is that they're going to make their own brand of shirts, which is definitely not a money laundering scheme, and it doesn't involve Alvaro Morata, so it's all good. But I'm keeping well, Rory. How is things in Milan?
Yeah, it's all good. Honestly, just been like trying so hard not to bite on the bait of Rio Ferdinand. I find it really odd that he was at some point, I think, quite a well-respected pundit, or at least a not massively derided pundit. But every so often he feels the need to become the most clickbaity fucking football Twitter bedroom lurker and just spout these opinions. And you just are like, Rio, why are you doing it? You're just making yourself look stupid. But yeah, beyond recovering from that video, I'm absolutely fine. All good. I know that he's spouting nonsense. But yeah, lots to talk about on this week's show, weirdly. Yeah. Lots of midweek action. We've got some FA Cup stuff to talk about. Haaland is back, and Kevin De Bruyne is back, which is good. We'll be talking about Leeds pushing Chelsea very, very close, but this time Conor Gallagher was the one to save them. And we'll be talking a little bit about Liverpool's kids continuing to get the business done. And we will maybe find some time to talk about Wolves and Blackburn and Newcastle. A great game there. And of course, in Serie A, we had some incredible midweek action. Sassuolo continued to be ass by losing 6-1, somehow getting worse. And then Inter continued their incredible run, and we'll be talking about where they might stand in the pantheon of Serie A history. So, guys, if we're ready, we're going to take a very quick break, and we'll come back with the Euro review. All right, we are back, and it's time for the Euro review. We're going to start with the FA Cup, and Adam, which game should we kick off with? Should it be Haaland 5, Luton Town 2?
Should we start with that? We might as well, because, yeah, the records that he brought to this match, and also, I suppose, Rory, let's highlight the stat that was kind of touted around Haaland's performance. So it's 1 goal in 4 prior to this match, and if you look at a wider kind of scale, it was 3 goals in 9 games. So it was a bit of a drought by his standards anyway. But he managed to bring in a 5-star performance, it's fair to say. He still couldn't get 10 out of 10 on FootMob, by all accounts. It's 9.7, I think it was. He didn't assist or got tackled for a ball.
Like
I don't know what he did.
It's impossible to get 10.
Yeah. What do you need? What does he need to do?
It was the same with Kevin De Bruyne, wasn't it? 9.6 or something like that. Probably like he just farted. That's what it was. So,
Yeah, absolutely incredible performance from them. Luton, I don't think they've been shipping that many goals. No. So for this felt a bit like out of the blue, right, Ben? All of a sudden, I was like, bloody hell, like the floodgates did open.
Yeah, I think other than against Arsenal, it feels like, especially against the top teams, they've been pretty watertight. And although they've lost a lot of the games, it's been by the odd goal. They lost, I think they drew with Liverpool at home, obviously got turned over at Anfield, but with the way that Liverpool are playing at the moment, that can happen. They only lost to Spurs 1-0. They lost to Man United 2-1. They lost to City in the league 2-1, I think. Yeah. So especially at Kenilworth Road, they've been very kind of tight at the back. So it was a bit of a surprise. I mean, when you've got Kevin De Bruyne and Erling Haaland, it's not, because they can do that to any team. Like, they'll do it to top teams and they'll do it to teams at the bottom of the table. But City were just on another level. It feels like they've sort of, obviously kind of, despite the Chelsea result a few weeks ago, sort of being the anomaly, it feels like they've sort of really clicked back into gear again. And obviously with Haaland back fit, De Bruyne back fit and firing, it sort of reminded me of that game that De Bruyne had against Wolves in the league like a couple of years ago, where he scored 4. Yeah. Obviously he assisted 4 the other night. But it was just one of those things where every single thing that him and Haaland did just came off. And obviously Haaland against Chelsea a few weeks back had the complete opposite in that game, where, you know, he was missing these very simple chances, the headers coming in from the box from De Bruyne. You know, De Bruyne could have had a hat-trick of assists that day for Haaland, but it just didn't quite go that way. But there was one of the goals, I think it might have been the hat-trick one or the second one, it was definitely in the first half, where De Bruyne plays the ball through and there's a brilliant angle from behind the goal where you can just see Haaland doesn't even look up. He doesn't even look up until the ball is at his feet, and then just dinks it over the keeper. It was just like, you know, City are that sort of side that make you just go, oh, sometimes. Yeah. Like, they've got that in them. It's just like, they're so, so impressive. And obviously, for Luton, no disgrace at all. I think you could probably tell a little bit by the team selection that they are prioritising the league. And rightly so as well. And City were just on another level. They're purring at the moment, aren't they?
No, that's it, exactly. And I think if you'd have offered Luton, like, you're going to score 2 goals before the game, they'd have been like, yeah, okay, we'll take that. Like, we'll absolutely take that. But Adam, it wasn't all good for Man City. Unfortunately, Jack Grealish is having a bit of a terrible season. He went off injured early on in the game. Is it a concern this season for Jack? I feel like he might be starting to lose his place in the Euros if he hasn't already lost it. And after such an incredible season for him at City last year, none of us like to see Jack upset. And he looked genuinely upset coming off the pitch, right?
Yeah, he certainly looks like he's a bit devoid of any confidence at the moment. Obviously, since last season where he had that kind of spectacular second half of the season, he's completely the opposite. And I thought Pep kind of got the best out of him last season. I thought he would push on, because certainly from a point of view when he first came to City, you knew it was going to be a season of adapting to the way Pep wanted to do things, right? Especially with players, he seems to spend time with them to develop their overall game. But it does feel like, and I think this is something that Ben covered off in his TikTok account, that, you know, it does feel like there's not a lot of love at the moment. And I appreciate that Pep's trying to push him. He does try to push these individuals to get more out of them. And I feel like at this moment in time, if he doesn't kind of back up his ideas potentially, and I don't think it's not necessarily him. I think you almost feel like with him or players of that kind of caliber, like a Federico Chiesa, you've got to give him some free will, like free time to do what he wants to do. And I think Pep's very regimented. He wants a lot more than that. He wants them to kind of come back and do the defensive duties and track back, which he did do last season. But obviously, I think the form of players like Doku has kind of taken that shine off him as well.
I find it odd, the Doku thing, because I think what Pep did was spend a year making Grealish not like Doku to then bring in Doku. And I feel like what Grealish had when he was at Villa was that he could beat a man, he was tricky, he was like expressive and flair. And like, so then Pep goes, no, I don't want that. I'm going to spend a year coaching you to be a very efficient footballer, right? Very good, but you never give the ball away. You win fouls. and like you score the odd goal, but your thing is recycling possession. So he spends a long time doing that with Grealish and then replaces him with the player that, okay, Grealish wasn't as dribbly a boy as Doku, but he had that in his locker. Hmm. And I feel like it's kind of weird that Pep went out and replaced him with someone that he's stopped Grealish from being. I just find it a really weird transition period. Like Ben, how do you feel about it? I feel like Grealish has kind of been replaced without needing to be replaced, even before this injury.
Yeah, I think it's classic Pep, isn't it? He always likes to sort of spring that sort of surprise when he's evolving his teams. And I don't think it was something that we necessarily saw coming, because when City did their business in the summer, they obviously let go of Mahrez, and you would have thought, oh, maybe they need a player to come in on the right-hand side. And Jeremy Doku, when he was playing in France, it was clear that he could play on both wings, but I didn't necessarily anticipate him to come in and take Grealish's spot, even though it felt like, almost in a way, Foden's sort of been bubbling for the last couple of years, and it's felt like, when is he going to get his chance at being a consistent first-team player? And I think Mahrez being out of the picture has really allowed him to shine, but then in the same way has also taken away from Grealish a little bit. And Grealish has been unlucky with injuries as well this year, to be fair. Like, I think he got injured against Copenhagen a few weeks back, and this injury was then a reoccurrence of that, which I think is why he was obviously visibly quite upset. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that's likeable about Jack Grealish is that he's always been a player, for good or bad, to kind of, you know, there's no holds barred there, is there? It's just like he kind of wears his emotions on his sleeve, and we all love him for that. Like, I think there's probably something a little bit wrong with you if you can't bring yourself to like Jack Grealish. Seeing him on the bench the other night was a little bit, it wasn't nice. Like, it wasn't, you know, you don't want to see that. And I think on the kind of reverse of that, in terms of bringing it back to his football ability, Jack Grealish is, you know, that's why when you rewind to the Euros in 2021, there was such this clamour for him to play. Because people want to see him lighten up the pitch. And that's exactly what he did at Aston Villa. And like you said, I think he can do the same things that Doku is being asked to do in terms of his role, because you've seen Jack Grealish's, I sort of always used to refer to, and still do now, like someone like Bukayo Saka feels like, because of his age, and you can tell by his principles and his personality, he's like a tactical sponge. And that's why Arteta's got the best out of him, and he's sort of adapted to any role. And flourished. And I feel like Grealish is the same. So it was a bit of a shame to see Grealish almost have his wings clipped a little bit over the last couple of years at City. But like you said, it's almost like the Villa Grealish sort of came back out a little bit of in him last year. But maybe that was just more prevalent in the numbers, because I think that when you actually watch his style, although there were some goals where he was like, he was bursting into the box and he was being aggressive and making things happen, you know, his style of play was exactly kind of like you said, what he was being asked to do the previous year, when people kind of thought that it was a bit boring and they weren't getting the best out of him. But last year, just because he added more goals and assists to his game, it felt like he was back. And he's one of those players that you just want to see him playing at the top of his game. And I think he's been a bit unlucky as well, in the sense that when Grealish has been out of the team, I think Doku has gone off the boil a little bit in recent weeks. And I think the only thing that Doku has actually got over Grealish is his explosiveness, because I think if you add the pace and the power to Grealish from Doku, I think you've got a very similar player. Mm. I think Grealish's unfortunate thing sometimes is just his body. He had a sort of a poor injury record at Villa a little bit as well, didn't he? And his body's let him down in that aspect. So it's a sad one, because I don't want him to miss out on the Euros. I actually think he probably starts for England in our best team on that left-hand side. I think people sometimes get a bit too, not worked up, but a bit too focused on the fact that you need pace. And it's like, I think you've definitely got to find a way to start Foden in that team, whether it's on the left or whether it's in that number 10, whether you play Bellingham there or not. But I think Grealish, people say that he slows the game down, but I think that's because he's got so much game intelligence. And I think when he's got that relationship with Shaw down that side for England, it really, really works. And then you've got the power and the explosiveness and the pace of Saka on the other side. So I think he offers that balance. So I think he would be a massive miss for England if this is his season sort of curtailed. So it is a shame, but I mean, with City, they've got the embarrassment of riches to sort of be able to cope without him, which is just a luxury not many other football clubs have.
No, well, this is it. I feel sorry for Jack. I don't feel sorry for City, right? I think there's massive difference. But speaking of England spaces opening up, Adam, I'm kind of joining the campaign for no Jordan Henderson, Ross Barkley. Right, let's just get Ross Barkley in the England squad. I think he is in fantastic form. If we're looking for players who can come in with a kind of individual kind of profile in that midfield, maybe later on in a game, able to beat a man, find a decent pass. He's having an incredible season, right? And I think he's got a, he should have a shout at being called up, right? He's been called up by Southgate in the past, a long time ago.
Sure.
But do you think there's a realistic shout at that? Because I think he's honestly been, well, he's been one of the best players in the league this year, like form-wise.
I think if he carries on with the form that he's displaying right now, there's definitely a shout for him to be considered. Because if you look at the players that could be in consideration, the likes of Jordan Henderson, for example, or Calvin Phillips in that centre spot, they are admittedly different types of players. But I think if you're talking about someone that's different, that can bring you an impact to the game, and it feels like at the moment that Southgate isn't too sure about the likes of, say, James Maddison, Eberechi Eze as well, in those players that could play a very similar style of format, then I think you've got someone in Ross Barkley that knows the setup quite well. He knows a lot of the players that are in the England setup as well. So he knows the expectations of what you need to be there and what you need to deliver. And I think, yeah, he's the type of player that's very clever. He's very, you know, when he's got the ball at his feet, he knows what to do and what to kind of drive forward with. And I think he gets the Southgate philosophy as well. So I think it's a no-brainer, but it will be subject to, I think, what Southgate decides to do with those players that don't play on a regular basis and whether he still sees them as his kind of reliable 11 or squad players in that respect. Because I think this kind of, I don't know, loyalty that he seems to have for these players, I feel are starting to hinder the England squad at large. Now, this season in particular, you're starting to see a lot more pockets of these players that aren't playing regularly. And you just get this feeling that he will call them up, unfortunately. He will try and call them up. And that is so frustrating, I think, for most England fans. But realistically, if you're a manager that's basing it on form and performances, then Ross Barkley deserves a shout. I mean, would you fit him in the first 11 or would you put him as a squad player out of interest?
No, I'd have him in the squad. I think it's just as an option. He's a very, sorry, if you hit, my dog knocked over my water bottle. But anyway, I'd have him as an option on the bench. I think he's just an alternative. If a game like, you know, in the group stages is a game hard to break down, we're struggling to get through, midfield's looking a bit tired, you can bring him on as a creative spark and someone for the last 15, 20 minutes. I think he'd just be a good option to have there. And as you said, the experience he's got, I think it could be interesting. Obviously, we all know we're not actually going to see him there and it'll be Calvin Phillips and Jordan Henderson anyway. But it's a nice thing to think about, maybe. But let's leave that game there for now, I suppose. And let's talk about, I said, Ben, you called it right. You said Chelsea had squeezed through. I thought Leeds would get past it, but you were right. Chelsea did squeeze through. Conor Gallagher in the 90th minute. It's good that there's one player who gives a shit about Chelsea, right? And Conor Gallagher is clearly that player, right?
Yeah, I hate Chelsea, but I actually felt a bit sorry for Gallagher on Sunday because he missed a couple of really, really important chances that could have won in that game. There was one that he was really unlucky with where he hit the post, but there was one where Kelleher came out and made himself big that he probably should have put that away, and then that wins the game, and Pochettino is kind of vindicated because there's been so much talk about that. But like you said, he is... I think there's a number of Chelsea players where you can't necessarily... Despite the money... You can't necessarily question their commitment. And I think Palmer is certainly one of them. And I think Gallagher definitely is because of the way, because of how industrious he is on the pitch. It kind of comes out in his character, sort of comes out in his style of play because that's his job in the team. I've always been super impressed with Gallagher. I know he divides opinion a lot. And obviously, as a Spurs fan, there's been constant links for him to come to us. And since his Palace days, since his West Brom days, he's always been someone that sort of kept an eye on. So, and the way he sort of took the goal as well, it felt like a bit of a moment for him because especially off the back of what happened on Sunday, you know, Stamford Bridge is one of those grounds that produces sometimes those moments when players actually really need them. I kind of think about like Torres and Werner sometimes having that sort of struggle. And then it's just like one goal really sort of lifts everything. And, you know, but it was, Chelsea were really poor. Like they were much poorer than they were in the cup final when I know sort of Poch has come out swinging off the back of that. And I think he's got every right to do so because, you know, he sort of spoke about, and he did hit back at Neville. And I actually think as much as I think that line was iconic, and at the time, incredibly funny.
Yeah.
And it was sort of, you know, it was thought out and I felt rehearsed brilliantly. But at the same time, we all loved it. But I think in the cold light of day, I actually think it's quite damaging and pretty harsh. Mm-hmm. And I think that Jamie Carragher nailed it on Monday Night Football. And bear in mind, like, he's sort of talking about his colleague, and he didn't slag off Neville or anything. He just sort of said, those labels stick. That will stick with Chelsea until they win something big, which with this current version of this Chelsea team, that seems quite a long way away. You know, on their day, they're a very good side. I thought they were very good against Liverpool for large portions of that game. And it's been in the big games where they've shown how good they actually can be. But it's in games like this where it's like, I know Leeds, I watched Leeds-Leicester on Friday night, and Leicester were a much better team and Leeds came away with a win. But I've still been impressed with Leeds whenever I've watched them. And you know they're always going to bring that tenacity and energy, whether it's the Bielsa teams, whether it's the Jesse March teams, mm-hmm. and now this version of the Leeds side, which I think will come back up. They were just too good for Chelsea for large periods of that game. I know Chelsea had a sort of a bit of a purple patch in the first half where they got back in front turned it around and got in front. But they were very poor. And I think a lot of Chelsea fans who I think actually felt sort of, I think there was a real split in the Chelsea fan base on Sunday, because Chelsea fans, not to stereotype, aren't notoriously known for being the ones that are going to trust the process and back the manager, mm-hmm. because they don't employ those kind of managers. They're not that sort of club. They're a team that will take an FA Cup. If they finished 12th, as long as they've won the FA Cup, it's a great season for them. But I do think there's a sort of almost a younger generation of Chelsea fans that are sort of coming through now that sort of can see the positives in that and say, you know what? We did play well. We were unlucky. And, you know, on another day, Gallagher puts that in and it doesn't hit the post. And that's sort of what Poch alluded to after the game. I think he said the line that we almost created too many chances. Mm-hmm. And even though that sounds bizarre, I kind of get what he means. Like, I do get what he means. But it was in these games which really let him down. And it's just, although they went through, I think the Chelsea fan base were from what I've seen anyway, were far more largely disappointed with yesterday, even though they got through in that manner, than they were on Sunday, which is a weird place to be. That's not where Chelsea fans usually are.
So well, I think fans now, more broadly, are more able to analyse performances and see that like that a performance can still be alarming even if you win, right? United fans should know, right? But you could still look, you could come out the ground and go, bloody hell, we got away with that. Like, we are not a good team, but I'll take the win, right? So I think fans in general are more able to kind of recognise that now. I thought, Leeds, obviously, on a fantastic run of form. I think it's 9 straight wins in the league. Daniel Farke got them playing incredible football. Like, Adam, they came very, very close, and it was Matteo Joseph, his first 2 goals for the club. Incredible scenes, the limbs in that Leeds end. I think the limbs at Stamford Bridge away end always look the best. It's the best limbs you'll ever see. But with Leeds thrown in there as well, it looked incredible. Well, I think it's nice to see him doing well, because I think at Norwich, I feel like you could have put Pep in there and they still would have gone down. It's just the law that Norwich have to go down. When they come up, they have to go down. That's just the way it is. So I felt like always quite sorry for him. But at Leeds, I feel like he's doing really, really well. He's got the fan base enthused again, which is like, once you've got Ellen Road excited and on your side, then it's a really terrifying place to go. And I think like Jesse Marsh never had that. The second, obviously following Bielsa, whoever it was never going to have that. But you could tell that the apathy was just through the roof. It wasn't working. And just having this restart. And I think him as a manager, he's really got the club and really tried to ingratiate himself with the fans and be like, I know what this team is about. I know what you fans want. And it feels like he's really bringing it. So it's really good to see. I am one of the few neutrals who really like Leeds United, and I think they need to be in the Premier League. I'd rather have them, a team that everybody hates, than a team that no one gives a shit about. So I think I really 100%. Want them in the league. I'm always delighted when they're doing well. And a player I was really happy to see, and I forgot he was here, was Ethan Ampadu. He had a kind of weird career in Serie A where he played relatively well but got relegated every time. So he played at Venezia and then at Spezia. So obviously going back to his childhood club, right? He started out at Chelsea, right? And I thought he played really well. And it's good to see him again just building his career, because I think when you're with two clubs and get back-to-back relegations, that can kind of leave a bit of a stain on your kind of reputation or on what people think of you. But I think him coming back to Leeds and playing really well, I was just really happy to see it, because he's a player I've always quite liked. I think technically he's very good. And he's always like pretty strong on the ball and stuff. So I was pretty happy to see him doing well. But for Leeds, they'll be delighted with two goals at Stamford Bridge. I think obviously they'd rather have won, but there's bigger things for them to focus on for now. Let's leave that one there and let's talk about a proper cup tie. The Alan Shearer derby, as Blackburn Rovers won, Newcastle won. Newcastle go through on penalties. Ben, this was a proper like ding dong. It was end to end. It was Blackburn looked like the Premier League team. It was incredible.
Yeah, it was such, it just felt like such an FA Cup tie. That's kind of the only way to describe it, really. It was great. Blackburn were really, really good. Sammy Smodics, obviously, unfortunately, missed his penalty in the shootout, didn't he? But he had a really good game. Took his goal pretty well, arrived in the right place. And they, like you said, they made themselves look like the Premier League team. And I think, you know, those midweek games in the FA Cup sometimes, you need the sort of fans to carry you through. And it does feel like Blackburn have obviously, as a club, to say they've been in a state of flux has been a bit of an understatement, because they have been in some really dark places, even though they've not dropped out of the Championship, I don't think, have they? They've been in the Championship the whole time, but they've just...
Yeah.
What did they do? Did they go down to League
One?
I think
they might have been in League One for one season, maybe.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. But, you know, they've not quite had it as bad as some of the other clubs, but they've been terribly ran for a long period. And it sort of feels like there's something to be excited again about Blackburn. And again, they were sort of always that team in the Premier League when I was sort of growing up that, you know, had these sort of maverick kind of players like Morten Gamst-Pedersen and Tugai that you sort of just thought there's something there to get behind with Blackburn. And it was just like, so it's good to see them competing at that level and taking a Premier League side all the way, and especially a Premier League side that are the richest club in the world, basically. And I know Newcastle fans won't like people saying that, because they'll actually say, no, we're not, we can't spend all this money, et cetera, et cetera. But Blackburn were super impressive. And to take a Premier League side to penalties, and it's a lottery, that can happen. I mean, I've been there as a Spurs fan. We went out to Sheffield United last year. Those FA Cup ties are horrible.
Yeah.
And with Chelsea, like, it's sort of, it's kind of different with Chelsea because of the run they've been on. But Newcastle have been on a really poor run as well. Like, really, really poor, obviously, off the back of playing Arsenal on Saturday, had the pants pulled down. I'm embarrassed, really. They were played off the park. So they would have been licking their wounds going into that. And there's something about a midweek FA Cup game at a Championship side that you know are going to be competitive. And I know Chelsea were the home team against Leeds, but Chelsea would have been feeling the same thing. Bear in mind, there's that rivalry of Chelsea and Leeds. That is not the game you want to play, especially after either losing the cup final in Newcastle. For them, it's not the sort of game they want to play off the back of a drubbing on Saturday and a really poor run of form that's seen their manager, well, maybe not in the media sense, but I think a lot of people from the outside are looking at it and thinking, well, why isn't he not kind of getting the same level of criticism that maybe Pochettino or Ten Hag is getting? But Newcastle got the job done. They did look the more composed team in the penalty shootout, I think. Like Smodics with the penalty, sort of. It just, he was amazing all night and he's been on fire in the Championship this season. But he just, it didn't look confident with the penalty. I hate that sort of straight run-up and the little stuff. Like, it really, as soon as I see a player for Spurs or whoever it is in a penalty shootout going up, especially when you're emotionally attached to it, with that sort of kind of run-up and you're just thinking, oh, here we go. Like, you just don't feel confident they're going to score. You can look at someone sometimes and just think they're not going to score. Mm-hmm. And that unfortunately happened to him. But, you know, Blackburn, they can count themselves unlucky. Newcastle can sort of count themselves lucky to get through, but I think they were professional enough to get the job done. Dubravka, who's coming for a lot of criticism, stepping up and effectively winning them the game with the shootout. So Newcastle will be pleased with that, because I think if they can get to an FA Cup semi-final, maybe, I can't remember. They've got City away though, haven't they, in the next round. So that's going to be incredibly tough.
This is it, right? And Eddie Howe came out and said, we need the FA Cup. We need to have a run in the FA Cup to give us some confidence heading into the Premier League. And it's like, well, it might not be
not
here
sure
for much
that.
Longer, mate. yeah, a bit of an unfortunate draw that. But for an Irish point of view, I'm always really excited about Sammy Smodic. But I've been really excited about old Sammy because he's been killing it for Blackburn for a few years. And I keep having to remember that he's got Irish citizenship. And I'm like, why isn't he getting a call up to the Ireland squad? I feel at some point he needs to be getting a call up for as a reward for this form, because he's been consistently very good for Blackburn. And also the player in midfield for them, Moran, he's on loan from Brighton and is the next kind of hot youth product to keep an eye out for Brighton. Like, Ben, were you excited to see him? Every time I've seen him, he looks so technically brilliant.
Yeah, at such a young age as well. There's been a lot of hype around him and he definitely delivered the other night. It's been, they, you know, I feel like Blackburn, obviously they've produced a lot of their own talent with, with Wharton, obviously, coming through and going to Palace. It feels like they've had a lot of kind of these exciting players. Obviously, Brereton Diaz a few years ago as well. Like they've kind of been a good, whether it's through their what they've produced or whether it's players that they've sort of brought in to nurture, like Moran from Brighton. They've kind of got an eye for that. Mm-hmm. It feels like with Blackburn, and it's kind of surprising to see that it's good. It feels like they've become very stable, but it feels like they're just maybe one or two of those players away from then trying to push towards to be in the playoffs and etc. But the thing is, the Championship is such a, you know, it was one that we always say it, like it's a league that will swallow you up. Yeah. So they've done well actually to, I think, to be that kind of stable, but it just feels that like there is an opportunity for them to kick on. And if they keep being able to bring these kind of young players in, then there is a chance for them to do that. Because sometimes in the Championship, a window will just open up for someone. Yeah, yeah. It will open up for someone. The playoffs and that's so unpredictable. We've seen it before where like Villa, for example, were like 15th and then Dean Smith came in and they won the playoffs. It's like these stranger things can happen in the Championship, and sometimes it's just about going on that run. It's all about momentum. So you never know. Like Blackburn, if they can sort of continue to bring these kind of players in and nurture them, then they could be that sort of surprise side that gets back up.
Yeah. Also, like, quickly before we move on to this, just to give a little bit of, like, because there was a protest in the 14th minute where the Blackburn fans, some Blackburn fans, threw some tennis balls onto the pitch. It was like 20 tennis balls. I think they need to, not to laugh at a protest, right, but like try, I don't know, maybe a few more tennis balls next time. But they're obviously not happy with the Venkies. And I think that it kind of goes to the point that you made there, Ben, is that the point is that they're not kicking on. They're not taking that extra thing. Like the owners are quite happy for them to just be in the Championship. Just that kind of passive investment, like a terrible property lord, and just collecting that money. And I feel like there is a bit of frustration amongst the fans, but it's a bit mad with the Venkies because I expected it to be much more unstable than it has been. It does still feel like weirdly stable, kind of like a benign dictatorship. Like there's no real damage, but nobody's really happy either. It kind of feels a bit weird. So I think, yeah, for Blackburn fans, they're getting a little bit frustrated at that, but a very good performance from them. A nice moment for Newcastle to get through to the next round of the Cup. But Adam, I don't think they'll be going much further as they've just drawn City. And elsewhere in the FA Cup, just to wrap up super quickly, Coventry did end the fairy tale for Maidstone United, winning 5-0. Leicester, with a bit of an upset, I suppose, winning 1-0 away to Bournemouth. A big win there. Enzo Maresca doing incredible stuff there. Another exciting Italian coach. Manchester United beat Nottingham Forest 1-0. Thank God there was no extra time in that game. That was a bloody terrible game. Casemiro at the death. The highlight was definitely Fernandes being held by the throat, right? Incredible.
Oh,
he looked like he was going to cry. He was amazing. Liverpool beat Southampton 3-0. Ben, you wanted to talk about this quickly with Dan's continuing to impress.
Yeah, that finish for his first goal was quality. And then the way he sniffed out the second chance as well. I know it was a fairly simple finish, but just being there. And I think, again, it sort of speaks to a lot of the stuff we talked about on Sunday with Klopp giving these young players the platform to go and, you know, take the pressure off and go and perform. Obviously, it was kind of the tale of the Suns with Dans and Kumas as well. Kumas getting his first goal on his first start. So it's been a bit of a fairy tale kind of week for Liverpool. And I think it's left their fans, I just saw a tweet just now that said, it was from a Liverpool fan saying that was the last ever FA Cup tie that Jurgen Klopp will manage at Anfield. And then I think it brings them back down to like that thing of just like, oh, you know what? We're really well set up for the future. Klopp's doing his best to kind of give these young players chances, exposure to first team football, whatever happens to them further down the road, because there's no guarantee that these players are going to go on and be established first team regular players. But the most important thing in football as a fan is to have that feeling, you know, the feeling that you go in somewhere, that there's something to believe in. And I think that sort of speaks true to some of the clubs that we touched on earlier, a bit like Leeds, where with Farker, it's like, as long as you can see you're going in the right direction and you're playing the good football, and it's like, you want something to just get behind. And Liverpool have always had that with Klopp, but it's just the fact that the next period for Liverpool is uncertain. So they want that. They feel like they're sort of getting that bit of stability. But they were impressive. Southampton impressed me as well, like another Championship side, just like Leeds, who gave as good as they've got, although the scoreline didn't reflect that as well for Southampton as it did for Leeds. I don't think 3-0 was necessarily fair. Southampton had a bucket load of chances in that first half.
Yeah.
And I think that then is the problem with Liverpool, that the fact that their team sheet was, you know, unrecognisable, Liverpool, obviously, other than the fact that some of these kids got chances on Sunday. It was Van Dijk at the back, but Southampton had a marginal offside disallowed goal as well. They sort of were getting in behind them for fun. And I can't remember who it was. There's the Southampton left winger. His name escapes me now. He was there last season in the Premier League as well, had multiple chances, but just couldn't finish. And Liverpool's sort of goal was being peppered, but they sort of, a bit like on Sunday, the young lads found their feet, composed themselves, and got them over the line. That finish from Jadon Downs was, Sulemana was the player that I was talking about.
And
real composure. And it was just an amazing moment for him at Anfield in front of a packed house and a set of fans that love what Klopp is doing right now, even though the future is, you know, it looks different for them. So I was impressed with Liverpool, but impressed with Southampton as well. I think we didn't really touch on Leicester, but obviously that was a massive result for them as well. Some really impressive players. And it was Fatal who getting that goal. You know, Leeds, Leicester and Southampton will probably all come back up. That playoff place is going to be tight, but they will probably all come back with maybe the three promoted teams from last season all going down. But no, they're super impressive Liverpool. But also, yeah, fair play to Southampton. I thought they gave as good as they got, really.
Yeah, really, really good performance from them. But again, yeah, quality told at the end. And I did want to very quickly say a bit of an FM update on my crew save. Trey Nione, the 16-year-old that came on for Liverpool, he has just got me promoted to the Championship with there the Alex. Go. So I was very excited to see him come on. I was like, you know, the meme of Leonardo DiCaprio pointing at the telly. I was like, oh, that's him. That's him. And he's been fantastic. But Liverpool won't give him back to me, the bastards. But yeah, very exciting player. So I was very excited to see him. And finally, Wolves winning 1-0 against Brighton. Lamina in the second minute, lying down and scoring a goal, taking the piss. And Gary O'Neill, how much more can we talk about Gary O'Neill, Adam? They are pushing for Europe and they're in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. Nobody saw this come in the day before the season started.
No one saw this happening. And I think we were guilty of essentially saying that there'd be relegation favourites in this kind of season.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's done a phenomenal job in that respect. And the fact that he's getting them into the quarterfinals of the FA Cup is just unreal. It must be a surreal experience for their fans, especially given the context of, I think they've been unlucky on many occasions due to refereeing decisions as well. So surely they could be potentially even higher in the league based on some of those decision making. But yeah, a superb season. And the fact that he's galvanized this squad to kind of have this resilience is absolutely amazing, Rory.
So absolutely brilliant for them. Brighton, just as often happens, just a bit guilty of wasting chances, not quite able to find that cutting edge. But it does mean that the FA Cup semi-finals are as follows. Quarterfinal, sorry, we have Man City taking on Newcastle, Chelsea hosting Leicester City, Wolves hosting Coventry in what I'm going to call the derby, pretty sure that's a Midlands derby, and Man United Liverpool. I'm really looking forward to that one. Good. So we're going to leave the FA Cup there, guys. I think we're going to take a very quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk all things Serie A. See you on the other side.
My name is David Artel, and you're listening to the Anglo-Italian Pod.
Ciao, bentornato, welcome back. It is time to talk about all things Serie A, and there were some games in hand to catch, and it started at the San Siro with La Dea in pretty good form, turning up to take on Inter, and of course, they were roundly battered 4-0 as Inter continue their run of scoring four goals in a game. This time not conceding a goal, the defence looking super tight, and of course, Lautaro Martinez getting his goal, Di Marco getting the rebound, Darmian opening the scoring, and of course, Fratesi at the end getting the goal to put the icing on top. But Adam, how many more ways can we describe impressive performances by Inter?
The superlatives have stopped to kind of exist, right, with this Inter squad, because they're just setting records at the moment, Rory. And I suppose to an extent it was almost fortuitous that they had a decision go in their favour, because there was that kind of first goal by De Ketelaere that was ruled off just because it was a judged handball, which was kind of, just fortuitous at that very moment. Because I think if that goes in, that might change the kind of whole approach for the game itself. But Inter, there's a mad stat about Inter that they've only been behind 36 minutes in total the whole season in terms of being a goal behind. So that is like just how the stats start, I suppose. We've got some more, Rory. I'm sure we'll be calling them out. But if you're talking about like clean sheets, obviously that's a 17th clean sheet. They only need four more in 13 more games to kind of be level with the all-time records. The likes of Gigi Buffon set this record as well more recently. So, and even Provedal, even last season, set a record of 21 clean sheets as well. So that'll be one hell of a record. And Jan Sommer has already got 16 of those. So that's crazy. And then you've got things like that they've gone the seven whole games without losing. That's the best in any Serie A season. But yeah, if we go back to the game itself, really superb performance. They really did have some clinical finishing on the night. I mean, even Lautaro's goal, just from distance, that was incredible from him. Fratesi starting to come up and contribute a lot more as well. So you saw that finish from Alexis Sanchez as well for that through ball into the box. I mean, this is still, when you think about it, they're still without Marcus Thuram. They're still without Calhanoglu, who's out potentially for 3 weeks with a thigh injury. They're hoping it's not more severe than that. And this is an Atalanta side that did well over the weekend. I mean, admittedly, they didn't really perform to their very best, but they still were a team that you would say ain't going to be easy for Inter. And they still pulled it out the back. So fantastic result for Inter. I do feel sorry for Carnesecchi because of all of those goals and efforts, he didn't stand a chance. Even the penalty, he saved it, for goodness sake. Like,
Well, he's turned into a bit of a penalty specialist. Eh? He's doing very well from the spot.
Exactly. So fantastic effort from him. But yeah, superb from Inter. And I think they're going to set more records as the weeks go on. Right, Rory?
Well, it'll be interesting to see. They currently have Juventus's 102 point record in their eyesight. They can get there, but the moment that everyone's talking about, because they are now 12 points clear, if results go their way and if they continue in this run of form, they could win the league in the Milan derby, in Milan's home game, and get the second star in front of their most hated rivals. It would be the biggest moment in Milan derby history, I think, if that happened. No, it just would be. Even the Champions League semi-final last year felt obviously monumental. But that, if it came down to that, it would be the biggest moment. And of course, it would have to be Calhanoglu who scored the goal. That would be the stipulation. It would have to be Calhanoglu who scored the winning goal. But Ben, I wanted to talk to you about, because I think there's a lot of comparisons now being made about Inter and Napoli last year. Now, I looked at Napoli's, how they were after 26 games this last season. And they'd lost two games, whereof Inter have lost one. So they'd lost to Inter and Lazio by this point. They'd scored 60 goals. Inter have currently scored more. And they've conceded 14. Inter have conceded less. And they were on one less point. Now, I was thinking about, but last year felt so much more exciting for Napoli, right? It felt like, oh my God, Napoli are tearing it up. But I think that's kind of because it was Napoli. We just didn't expect it, right? We were like, where the hell's this come from? Should people be more excited about this Inter performance across the season? Because as we just said, they seem to be breaking all records at the moment.
I think you kind of nailed it with the Napoli thing. It was a lot about feeling, wasn't it? Because Napoli haven't done it in so long. And I think whatever you sort of, you know, obviously there'll be people in their rivals that really don't want them to do that. And it's kind of, you know, funny to sort of point at them and say, well, you haven't won a thing in ages. You haven't competed. Blah, blah, blah. You've always been that nearly kind of team, a team full of stars. You sort of think back to 10 years ago with Lavezzi and Higuain and those kind of players. They've always been that nearly kind of team, Napoli. So last year felt special because it was just like, they're going to do it. There was that constant thing every week. It was like, they're actually going to do this. They're going to do it. And I think the outside footballing world, outside of the Serie A, we're kind of looking at that as a story, because Napoli is sort of that club that for English fans, for example, who don't really have a dog in the fight, who have grown up loving Italian football because of, you know, the 90s and everything like that, and how well it was sort of broadcast over here, and people fell in love with Italian football, whereas in the last 5 or 10 years, that love has sort of definitely dwindled. Mm-hmm. And I think we talk about this all the time with sort of the the perception of someone like Del Toro and the respect. I saw someone else tweet it the other day about that he doesn't get the respect he deserves. Mm-hmm. And I think the league doesn't necessarily in general. And I think that's why it almost felt like a massive story for Napoli, because it got more eyes back on it, back on the league from people who had maybe taken less a kind of a backseat in their interest of it. Because it felt like a throwback. And that's exactly what it felt like, especially in the kind of the way they played and Osimhen leading the line and Kvaratskhelia. It just felt so exciting and so kind of just like it's dynamic, incredible side. But I think the difference is you always got the sense that maybe I never saw how Napoli were going to kick on and make it a kind of a dynasty and almost like a have that longevity at the top. Whereas this, there's something inevitable about this Inter side. I know they've obviously, they won the title back in 2021.
Was it 2022?
Yeah. And then obviously it was Napoli, then Milan. Oh no, Milan, then Napoli. But it's just, So, you know, they haven't done it in a couple of years. And even that for Inter, that it kind of felt the same at that time, because it was like Inter haven't won it in ages. And there's sort of been Juventus dominating the league. And I think there was almost that nostalgia that came back into it. And it was like, it was great to see Inter back competing where they were. And again, sort of on the same level with the Champions League this last year. Although I think a lot of people, weirdly, I think it went the other way last year with Inter in the Champions League. Because I think the fact that they got there, people were questioning how, and it was almost more people turning their noses up. Bizarrely, it felt incredibly strange, and there wasn't this recognition of this great side. But I think you watch the way they've played this season, and the how incredibly professional they've been, but also how entertaining they've been as well. So I would say I think this. I do think this team is better. It feels more well-rounded. It feels more solid. It doesn't necessarily feel, I mean, in terms of the numbers, it feels equally as potent. From the eye test of how well Lautaro has performed and the partnership that he struck with Thuram. But I think there's something about Osimhen and Kvaratskhelia last season that feels more exciting. Whereas Martinez and Thuram, it's just like, that. And that's why I don't think they're necessarily getting the credit that they deserve. Whereas last season, from the wider footballing landscape, Osimhen and Kvaratskhelia were getting all the plaudits because it was new, it was fresh and exciting, whereas Inter didn't get quite that same treatment. And I said it before, like, I just think Inter, they got to the Champions League final last season. I would not be surprised if they go far again this year. I would not be surprised. I think people are underestimating them so much. And I think this Inter team will probably look back in maybe 5 or 10 years and think this was one of the great Inter sides. I really do. Like, or it's on the cusp of being that, because there's players like Barella, and even you can see players like Bastoni. Like Lautaro Martinez has not just made himself a cult hero at Inter, but he's made himself a legend.
Over
100 legend. goals, and for them in Serie A and all that kind of stuff. Whereas like there's players like Barella and Bastoni, although Barella is, I think, considered by on that cusp of world class by many as one of the best midfielders in the world, I don't think he'll necessarily get the appreciation until a couple of years' time when he reaches that Verratti sort of status, if you get what I mean. And I think Bastoni will be the same as well. Again, he's sort of gone up another gear this year, I feel like.
I think the team, you made a good point with it, much more rounded, because I feel like with Napoli, it was... Obviously, there was a lot of incredible players last year. Like, Lobotka had an insane season. Anguissa was incredible. They had Kim Min-jae. Yeah. But it felt like the goals were very much Osimhen and Kvaratskhelia, right? They were getting the goals. Everyone else was facilitating them getting the goals. For Inter, it feels like the goals were a bit more spread out amongst the around the squad. Even though Lautaro and Thuram are still those focal points, you're still getting Çalhanoğlu with a career high in a season, I think, like smashing the records for himself. You've got like the defenders popping up and getting goals. I feel like it's a bit more spread out across the squad. But I was trying to analyze today whether it was just romanticism and the fact that I watch Inter more, or I'm more used to watching Inter, that I found the Napoli football last year a bit more exciting. I think I found that team a little bit more exciting, but I don't know how much of that is romanticism or me actually like analyzing and watching the football properly. But I think it's an interesting conversation, because I think when you think back to Inter teams that have dominated in the past, like when they had Mancini as manager, when they had Mourinho, when they, like, every year they managed to beat Roma to the title by 1 point for like 5 years in a row or something. Like, they've done it in the past, into where they dominated for periods. And it does feel like this could be the start of them dominating for a while, because Milan are a bit away from challenging, I think, like consistently. Juve, we've seen, are a bit away from challenging consistently. Napoli are nowhere near it. So I think it's kind of weird to see, like, Adam, we thought Serie A was going to be super competitive and this year was going to be super competitive. But again, there's no team really close to the top team, right?
Yeah. Unfortunately, what we've seen is a number of teams being, I suppose, poorer than they have been in previous seasons. Mm-hmm. Napoli, obviously, have demonstrated this season that they're the worst title defenders so far. And that's been driven by a lot of external factors, it's fair to say. But then if you look at the likes of, say, Milan as well, they've been just so inconsistent with durations of the season. And they kind of demonstrated towards the latter part of last season where they were just so poor. They went on that endless run where they couldn't get by a win, for example. Mm-hmm. And then Juventus, this was supposed to be the season that was supposed to be easier for them, right? They didn't have to worry about Europe. They were going to be a lot more consolidated with the squad that they had. But they still persist to have these kind of inconsistent results. And, you know, if you go by what Allegri's saying, he's saying that certain players aren't playing to their kind of potential and also to his kind of directions as well. He kind of calls out Chiesa for not tracking back, for example, and not doing as he expects. He even kind of highlighted it by saying he demanded him to stay on the left-hand side, but he keeps on going in the middle. So, you know, it's these kind of frustrations that I think has really meant that with Inter and the momentum that they've created with Simeone and Zaghi and that kind of style of play, they've just been able to just capitalize, I suppose, on the rest and just bombard the rest of the league. So just that quality as well. I think if you consider that when they've rotated, that's the easiest part to kind of do and like maybe take advantage because you've got players that haven't got that kind of match sharpness and they've still continued that despite that.
Yeah. No, exactly. They're just rounding and filling up that squad really nicely. I was listening to an Arsenal podcast today with James McNicholas, who's a great journalist, and he was talking about how important it is to have squad players. Not every player needs to be your star player. You need to have important squad players that can come in and know that the level isn't dropping. And I feel like we've said that about Inter so many times that they've just, apart from up front, where they just need that little bit more, but Taremi is coming, right? They don't have that drop-off in level. And I think you look at this, like the starting lineup for this game, and there's still like Aslani in midfield. There's like Mkhitaryan, who isn't like starting every game. But, you know, if he eats more mozzarella, maybe he can keep going for a few more years.
That was so good.
I love that, by the way. But, you know, there's just so much quality there. So I think, yeah, incredible stuff from them. I'm really excited to see how far this season goes for them, genuinely, because I think they could break records. And as we've said, we're kind of tipping them to be the dark horse in the Champions League. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But we're going to leave Inter there with their 4-0 win. For Atalanta, not really much to say. Just move on, heads down into the next game. They've got some tough fixtures coming up still, Atalanta. So they need to make sure that they continue, that they try and get back over this quickly. Their next game coming up is Bologna at home. Bloody hell, that is a tough fixture. But the other fixture on Wednesday night was Sassuolo 1, Napoli 6. Now, of course, the Anglo-Italian pod curse kicked in. You're welcome, Paterno Pei. I said that Napoli can't hit a barn door. They can't score goals. So, of course, the next game, Osimhen hat-trick, Kvaratskhelia with 2, and Rachmani chips in with 1. Sassuolo did get 1. They opened the scoring even. So they had them on the ropes for a minute, but it didn't last long. And Napoli, just absolutely frightening. I think this was the perfect fixture for them, right? Going up against a team, quickly heading towards rock bottom,
yeah.
Without a manager. They've got their under-21 caretaker manager in charge, everything a bit lost, and Napoli just rocked up and absolutely dominated them.
Yeah, I mean, that, like you said, Sassuolo took the lead. It was a brilliant goal. Like when there was an angle of the replay where it's just that the curve starts so far from outside the post and bends back in, and it was just like, hang on a minute. But then it just sort of irritated Napoli a little bit because
yeah.
I think we've seen this with a lot of kind of teams where, I mean, Napoli are in, they're not in dire straits, but it's just like compared to last season, the fall off has been huge and they've kind of been licking their wounds for a while, waiting for Osimhen to get back to that level. Obviously, we talked about it on Monday about some of the chances that he missed, mm-hmm. In that game, and it just felt like them going behind almost just irritated Napoli, and Osimhen found his form. But there was some of the goals where some of the space that he had, I think it was to make it 3-1. I mean, it's terrible from Sassuolo playing out from the back, and they capitalise, and it's a great finish to dink it over the keeper. But he was just left with so much room. And, you know, Napoli are going to need a lot more of this from Osimhen for the rest of the year to make their season somewhat respectable in terms of the title challenge. But even like with the third and fourth goal were basically the same for Sassuolo.
That is
a team that's just playing with absolutely no confidence right now, and nothing is sort of going for them. We kind of saw that. I know obviously Chelsea turned it around the other night, but the goal they gifted to Leeds was in a very similar manner to a couple of the goals that Sassuolo gifted to Napoli. And if there's one striker that you probably don't want to do that to, it's Osimhen. And I think that's kind of allowed him to rediscover something, at least. And obviously Kvaratskhelia getting in the act as well, sort of with that, what we were used to seeing last season, in terms of cutting in on the left-hand side and bending it in the far corner. But it was just every goal was so easy for Napoli. And, you know, it was a perfect sort of game for them, and it was what they needed. But, I mean, Sassuolo kind of feels like they're condemned now.
They are only going one way. There's been a few managers linked, but none of them are particularly inspiring at this point. I think there's also rumours that they could just stick with the caretaker and just let him see out the season. But they are now level on points with Cagliari. That relegation fight is going to be so, so close. So Verona, Sassuolo, Cagliari all played the same number of games now, all on 20 points. And Frosinone, Udinese, just above them, on 23, with Lecce slowly getting roped in, but they should just have enough about them. So, 4-5 teams there battling it out for survival. But Sassuolo, this was a huge game for them. Obviously, against Napoli, it was always going to be difficult, but they couldn't get the job done. But as you said, for Osimhen, this is just a big confidence boost for him. It maybe sticks another 10 million on the price tag that De Laurentiis can ask for. Everybody's happy. I think De Laurentiis now is more just concerned about recouping as much of his investment as he can, because obviously once clubs know a player wants to leave, they just take 20 million off, don't they? They're not like, yeah. But so I think for De Laurentiis, as long as he finishes the season well, they'd be quite happy. But Adam, it was good to see Kvaratskhelia kind of with a bit of confidence and a bit of verve, right?
Yeah, he kind of displayed it in the last match, and he's followed that on. I think that was the one kind of good thing about this match, was probably against a team that's devoid of any confidence right now in Sassuolo. That's probably a helping, like, building ground for Calzona, and in particular the way that they've gone about it. So, you know, I think that's just going to be breeding them confidence for that Champions League match against Barcelona. But obviously they've got to go through the first hurdle, which is obviously this weekend against Juventus. So that's going to be a spicy game, it's fair to say. And I seem to remember the last time these two met up, it ended up in a 5-1 win for Napoli. So we will see if we will see the kind of reminiscence of that kind of performance again at the Stadio Diego Maradona. But it's a fantastic performance by Napoli, and their fans are purring at what could be for the rest of the season, right?
Well, they're still somehow not actually out of the European fight. They're only 1 point behind Fiorentina, level on points with Lazio, and 6 points behind the Europa League spots. So they're still not massively out of it. That race for Europe is going to go right down to the very last day of the season. Still plenty to fight for Napoli. But guys, that is all of the Serie A action this week. We are going to take another very quick break. And when we come back, we are going to be previewing all of the weekend's action. We will see you there.
My name is Massimo Morales, and you are listening to Anglo-Italian Podcast.
And here we are. It is time for the weekend preview. I'm going to start in the Premier League, and it starts on Saturday, 3:00. No early kickoffs. Klopp's going to be fuming. We have Newcastle taking on Wolves in the first of the 3:00 kickoffs. That's a spicy one. Gary O'Neill, I reckon they can get a win up in the Toon there. Definitely, definitely an away win, I reckon. Ben, Spurs taking on newly manager bounce Crystal Palace. Ian, one sentence, how are we feeling about this game?
I don't know. It's just not great. But only because it's that new manager curse thing. It's like we've been here so many times with Spurs, where realistically we should be going into this game trying to win it. Apparently no Porro for Saturday, which is a big miss. A doggy should be back. So hopefully that helps us. Richarlison may be out as well, apparently. So interesting to see what we do there. But fuck it, we're going to win. We're going to win.
Yeah, that's the spirit. Plenty of goals, I fancy, in this one. We have Forest taking on Liverpool in the next of the 3 o'clock kickoffs. Brentford hosting Chelsea. I would say that's going to be a close one, but Brentford have been absolutely toilet recently, so I just think Chelsea are probably going to get something there. Everton taking on West Ham, Adam, in the David Moyes derby. West Ham finally got a win against Brentford last week. Are they going to follow it up with another one against Everton?
Well, see, Everton will be sort of buoyed by getting the points back as well. It feels like one of those ones where West Ham, they've sort of been that sort of team where they've obviously got a massive result on Monday against Brentford, which sort of has plunged Brentford back into it a little bit, especially with Everton getting the points back. And it just sort of feels like they'll be buoyed a little bit by that Everton. So we'll see what happens with that one. I think I could see that just being a score draw, either a boring 0-0, or I think Everton might nick it.
We will see. I think, yeah, I don't know why I picked that one. Fulham, we are hosting Brighton as another 3 o'clock kickoff. And then in the late game, we have Luton hosting Aston Villa. On Sunday, we got Burnley taking on Bournemouth, and then the big game, here we go, the one we're all pretty excited about. I'm kind of vaguely getting my hopes up that the footballing gods might do something, but Man City hosting Manchester United. Ben, I'm going to go to you. How many are Manchester United going to lose by?
I think the question should be, how many goals do they have to lose by for Ten Hag to lose his job?
Does it need to be another seven? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Can a manager survive? I mean, was it Haasen who got beat 9-0 twice?
Yeah.
Can Ten Hag survive 2-7-0 defeats away at City and Liverpool? I think this will be pretty. It's one of those ones actually where you see it sometimes. It's almost like when it happened to them at Anfield. You can put 7-0 down as like a freak, whereas like a 4-0 feels like a paste in almost in a weird way. And I could see it being like that, almost City toying with them a little bit. A bit like they did at Old Trafford, where it's like they could have gone for more. They could have actually, City could have wiped the floor with them at Old Trafford. They beat them 3-0. City didn't get, Man United didn't get within arm's length of City. Yeah. And that's almost more embarrassing, especially on your own patch. But I could see 3-1, 4-1, 4-0, that kind of thing. I think they'll tear them apart. I really do.
That was more humiliating than choosing not to batter them, wasn't it?
They just toyed with them.
Oh, God, that was embarrassing. I think this is going to be a incredibly bad scoreline. Ten Hag having a completely normal one this week and losing his shit about the Fulham TikTok laughing at Bruno Fernandes. Oh, Eric Ten Hag got very upset because that is the most important thing on his desk at the moment, apparently. And then on Monday night, we have Sheffield United hosting Arsenal. I'm not saying anything because I don't want to tempt fate. In Serie A, we are going to talk about this weekend. Oh, I've lost the fixtures. It all starts on today, as you are listening. Lazio hosting Milan. A beautiful way to kick off the weekend. Lazio kind of struggling for form a little bit. They need to get themselves back into the European race. They're struggling for consistency as always, Lazio, but Milan very much the same. I feel like this could be a really interesting game. I feel like Milan could possibly get a result there. I don't have much faith in Lazio at the moment. On Saturday, we have Udinese taking on Salernitana in a massive game at the bottom. Obviously, Salernitana very much lost and pretty much relegated. But Udinese, can they get a draw or can they actually win a game and try and get a little bit of space between them and the basement clubs? Later on the Saturday, we have Monza hosting Roma. That'll be an interesting one. Really interesting game, that. I think Roma obviously scoring a lot of goals at the moment, but conceding a few as well. Monza at home is tricky again, so I feel like that could have a bit of a banana skin written all over it. But De Rossi absolutely loving life at the moment. And then the late game on Saturday, Torino taking on Fiorentina, two massively improving teams. Torino especially, apart from the last game against Roma, where they were quite unlucky to lose. They've been playing quietly very well. And I think Fiorentina, again, all about consistency. If they can get a win here in Turin, that would be a massive, massive result for them. On Sunday, two of the basement boys. This is a biggie. We've got Verona taking on Sassuolo. If you've got nothing to do on Sunday afternoon, sit and watch this game. It's going to be chaos. Neither team can defend. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see what happens in this one. Adam, Verona versus Sassuolo. This is massive.
This is a huge game, and this is not the only six-pointer this weekend either. But yeah, I'm skeptical if they can both attack, but I would say I probably edge it in terms of a favour for Hellas Verona, because I think they've got more attacking players, more players willing to score goals at the moment. But I suppose one thing to caveat is Domenico Berardi. He was on the bench for Sassuolo midweek against Napoli. Could this be a sign that he's coming back into the squad? Let's wait and see. But yeah, that's promising for their kind of hopes to stay upright, Rory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that would be absolutely huge for them. Next, we have Frosinone taking on Lecce. Two teams desperately trying to not get involved in the relegation battle. Frosinone kind of involved now. Lecce just 1 point ahead. That is going to be an absolute... That, again, Adam, how do you see this one going? Frosinone at home conceding a lot of goals. Lecce don't really score many, but tend to not concede that many.
No, true. I think I favour Frosinone because of the endeavour that they displayed in the last match against Juventus. Mm-hmm. You know, Frosinone have got some really good players, technical players like Sule, Mazzella and Bresciani, who scored that fantastic goal against Juventus. So I sort of favour them. However, they have got a kind of moment in them at the back as well. And, you know, with Calgary, they seem to have a lot of fight. They might not necessarily have a lot of quality in their squads, with the exceptions of the likes of Gaetano, for example, and Mvumbu, for example. But yeah, it could go either way. I think it's going to be a point shared, personally. I think this is where it's going to go. It might be a 2-2 kind of style game, but... yeah, I think for quality-wise, I think Frosinone have it in them to win this match. But, you know, don't write off Calgary. That's all I would say.
Yeah. Next up, we have Empoli taking on Cagliari. Then we have Atalanta taking on Bologna, 6 o'clock on Sunday, Italian time. And then it's the big one, Napoli taking on Juventus. All things falling apart at Juve. Another day. Another comment in the press from Allegri slagging off Chiesa, and it looks like Chiesa is definitely out the door. All the noise is that he's going to be sold this summer. I think there's plenty of teams that are going to be lining up for him if he can stay fit. I would take him at Arsenal tomorrow. I reckon you could get him for about 60 million. I think that would be all right. Napoli, Juve, Ben, how are you feeling about this one? Free score in Napoli. They have to win it, right?
Yeah, they've got to. Like we were sort of saying before, it feels like they've got to try and find a way to resurrect their season somehow. And I think Sassuolo have kind of given them the opportunity to get Osimhen back up to sort of match sharpness and scoring goals and having that hunger and that confidence. So I think Juventus should probably be quite worried, because it's one of those ones where there's probably, although Uwe doesn't feel great at the moment, it's probably they're looking at that thinking, well, Napoli have had a poor season. We should be able to go there and get a result. But I think they do well not to underestimate Napoli at the weekend. I think they might have a little bit of fire in their belly after that, especially with having Osimhen back.
Well, exactly, yeah. And like, Adam, as you said, last year, this was like a very, very, very scarring moment for Juve. Do you think they'll have revenge in their mind and they might be pushing a little bit harder?
I don't know. It's a hard one to kind of measure, because I think, yeah, the kind of revival of Napoli of late is going to potentially be something that Allegri will be wary of. But I think given the kind of form that Juventus are in, they'll just want to concentrate on just winning the game itself rather than have the revenge element. I think it's too much to kind of think back that far. But again, this feels like it could be a draw again. I can see it being everyone cancels each other out. They're both defensively solid when they want to be, and I'd say probably Juventus more so than Napoli. So it would be just a question of, can Juventus exploit Napoli on the counter-attack, for example? We haven't seen the best of Kostic, for example. So are they going to be playing a lot more centrally? Are they going to try and dominate play in the middle of the park? And we know the last time they tried to do that, Napoli were the better side. So I don't necessarily feel that that's going to happen, because Napoli aren't the kind of same kind of swagger as they had last season when they were winning 5-1 against Juventus. But you never know. Zielinski hasn't really played that often in the league. So again, this could be the introduction that Napoli need for this game.
Well, we will see. I'm excited for it. What a beautiful Sunday evening that is going to be. And then on Monday evening, we have Inter taking on Genoa. Inter are going to score 4 goals. We know that will happen. That's what happens. So, guys, that is the end of the weekend preview. We're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, Ben's going to play his first game with Tiki Taka Toe. Let's do it. Here we go. Music. Welcome back. It's time for this week's edition of the Tiki-Taka-Toe Quiz, and this time it is myself going up against Ben in his first game in the Tiki-Taka-Toe. Now, if you are not watching online, I will describe the square to you. We have along the top Fulham, Liverpool and Wolves, and along the side we have Ireland, Newcastle and Argentina. Lots to think about. Now, Ben, I'm going to let you go first. Pick your square and give us the player.
Right. Well, the tactic I feel like with this is always go for the middle. Mm-hmm. But there's some quite hard ones on here that I feel like I kind of want to get out of the way just in case you get them. But I'm going to take that chance and I'm going to go with Andy Carroll for the middle square of Newcastle Liverpool.
Andy Carroll. Good work. There he is. Beautiful. Okay, Andy Carroll. Now, I'm absolutely bricking it about that Wolves and Argentina square because I cannot think of a single one. So I'm going to block off with, oh God, I can't even think of Wolves and Newcastle at the minute. So I'm going to go Fulham and Newcastle and I'm going to say Mitrovic. What a player.
Okay. That Fulham Ireland one is, I thought I had a really good one, then I realised I would actually piss a lot of people off if I said who I thought it was.
Okay. I'm intrigued now.
I won't. Yeah, well, if it comes to it, I'll say who it was. I think it would be wrong. So I'm going to go with Wolves, Ireland, and I'm going to go Matt Doherty.
Matt Doherty, yeah. That means I've got to think of an Argentinian who played for Fulham, and now I'm in trouble. Argentinian who played for Fulham. Now, a Facundo is coming into mind. For Facundo of Fulham. Facundo is a very Argentinian name, but it's not. I can't think of the surname. Balls. I'm going to go for Fulham and Ireland and just go for Damien Duff.
Yeah, that literally just popped into my head. I was thinking, I'm gllaid I can say this now. I was going to say Chris Baird, and then I realised that he was Northern Irish, I think.
Close, he's from Northern Ireland.
So I was like, oh, that's a really good one. And then I was like forgetting the most obvious one. And it was like, if I'd have said Chris Baird.
I
checked myself pretty quickly. I'm going to have to gamble on the fact that you haven't got a Fulham Argentina player because I cannot think of one saving my life. So I'm going to go with Liverpool, Argentina, and go for Maxi Rodriguez.
Oh, Max.
Is that wrong?
Rodriguez. Very nice work. Now, Liverpool Island is going to be pretty simple, I think, as I say that and now panic that I can't think of one. But, yeah, I'm just going to have to block you off, aren't I? So I'm going to do Liverpool and Ireland to do Steve Finnan.
That was mine as well. Then I had a prang of like, is he Irish?
I had to remind myself if he played for Ireland or not. Yeah.
to be a Fulham Argentina player.
No, there is, but I can't think of his fucking second name.
It must have been like when, I think I've got it.
Right.
Paolo Gazzaniga.
Gazzaniga. Nice. Come on. Absolutely fantastic work. Need to search who this Facundo was because it's going to drive me mad. Facundo. Oh, God. Player in like the 2000s? Facundo Sava? Oh, Facundo Sava. That was his name.
That is a great. You'd probably deserve it for that shout because it was literally just like, Gazzaniga just popped into my head, whereas like you had an idea of who you wanted to say the whole time and you just couldn't remember the name, whereas like Gazzaniga was just a light bulb moment that came to me. So I feel like
they all count, whether it's tapped in offline, bounces in off your ass, they all count. Yeah. They all count.
There's no pictures on a scorecard.
Yeah, exactly. Well, congratulations, Ben. My losing streak continues. I really need to turn this franchise around. I'm not doing well at all. But guys, thank you for joining us. Thank you, Ben, for joining us. We hope you enjoyed yourself and we can have you on for more Thursdays, hopefully.
Definitely.
Adam, thanks for joining us.
I've been on many virtual bus stops. That's all I can say. This has been the most craziest podcast that I've never had to actually contribute on. So thank you for having me on, Rory.
You're with us in spirit. It's fine. Yeah. You're with us in spirit. Well, guys, thank you for joining. Oh, Ben's camera's gone. And as always, you can find us on Twitter at Italian Anglo Pod, on Instagram and TikTok at Anglo Italian Pod. Make sure to hit the like and subscribe buttons down here somewhere. And you can join us on Monday at 8:30 GMT when we wrap up all of the weekend's action in Serie A and the Premier League over on YouTube. So make sure to join us for that. Get involved in the chat. Guys, anything to say before I let these people enjoy their weekends?
No, have a great weekend.
Yeah, have a great weekend. I can't wait to talk about Man City thrashing Man United on Monday.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to it. So, guys, we are going to leave you with our quote of the week, and it comes from Davide Fratesi, who simply says, "You can't enter San Siro without blood in your eyes. With the energy that the stadium gives you, you can break walls with your head." Grazie, guys. We will see you on Monday. Ciao. A dopo.
Podcast Network.